Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and thank you for another show of U.S. national elections. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We want to thank America for been tuning into the U.S. national election, where we've been having candidates from all over the country come on our show to talk about their platform and what they expect to do when they get to Congress for the American people. Today, we have an exciting guest on our show. She is a congressional candidate running out of Utah in the 2nd District, Mary Wilson Burkett. She'll be in the studio shortly. She's going to talk about the challenges that she faces in Utah, as well as the challenges we face in America. And Ms. Burkett is going to share her insight on what her plans are for Utah and for the American people. I'd like to welcome to the show U.S. congressional candidate from the Utah District 2, Mary Wilson Burkett. Good afternoon. How are you, ma'am?
I'm well. How are you?
Thank you, except I haven't eaten my lunch yet.
Oh. Yeah, mine was crackers and peanut butter, and I just had to inhale them quick.
Well, that's good. I'm looking forward to my lunch after the show. Really want to thank you for being on our show. You are a very informative candidate for Congress. We've done many interviews in the past, and we look forward to doing many more with you. For the American people who haven't had a chance to get to know who congressional candidate Mary Wilson Burkett is, can you please just briefly talk about who you are and how we got to you running for U.S. Congress?
For Congress. Yeah, sure. I was actually born in southern New Jersey when my dad was in the Army at Fort Dix. My dad was a 20-year veteran, you know, combat veteran, World War II in Korea. And we moved to California after he retired. He was one of those people that wanted to stay until he dropped in the Army. But he saw his name on a list of people that would be going in the second, I think it was the second group of advisors that were going to be sent to Vietnam. And that's when he decided he was going to get out. Two wars were plenty for him, he said. So we moved to California. As an adult, I moved to Utah. I've been here most of my life. I love Utah. It's beautiful. The people are great. We have four congressional districts in Utah. We have in District 1, we have a Republican retiring. In District 4, we lost that seat 2 years ago to a Democrat. So that's a really high, both of those are pretty high visibility races. I'm running against, in District 2, an incumbent, a Republican incumbent that uses the word conservative when it suits him. But I dug into his voting record, and it's not a conservative voting record. He's okay with raising the debt last year, three times last year. He voted to increase our debt. The debt was at $16 trillion when he, got into office almost 8 years ago. It is now, we're on our way to $24.150 billion. That's the biggest reason I'm running. We have to invite him to seek employment elsewhere, because as long as he's in there, he's going to be okay raising the debt. I believe that a debt of this magnitude is like putting chains on our children and grandchildren. You and I probably won't be responsible for it, but they will be. And their lives are going to be very different from ours. And we need people in D.C. who are willing to stand up to Republican leadership, that's a phrase I use with air quotes, and just say, no, I can't vote for more debt. We've got to start cutting our spending. We can't keep doing this.
I could not agree with you more that we have to get our spending under control. And the federal government has to be the leader of that. And we're noticing across the country, not only the federal government, but in a lot of these blue states, their budgets are overrun with high taxes. Their budgets are running a deficit. And yes, it's something that we need to curtail and get under control so our children and grandchildren won't be affected by that
right.
misrepresentation of the leadership in government. What are your
yep.
plans when your outline plans that you have that you want to address when you get in Congress?
Yeah, the list is pretty long as far as cutting spending. I want to start with, and this is something Jason Chaffetz tried to do back in 2012, and he was unsuccessful. I studied the opposition that rose up against him on this, and so we're going to be better prepared. The federal government owns 77,000 vacant and or underutilized buildings all over the country. And what's really odd to me is how there's a department that owns like 14% of those buildings, and then there's another that owns 11% of those buildings. It's like, no, let's get it all under one umbrella and then either sell them or give them away. I think there are some of these buildings, and you can look this up online, you can Google it, and you can see some of these buildings are really nice. They're like four-story brick buildings that any nonprofit would be thrilled to have for their operation. We could do a lot of good with that. And we're told that the maintenance costs every year are somewhere between $8 and $21 billion. Let's get rid of those. We get rid of that expenditure. I think that there are a lot of other small things like that that we can work on right away. Just knock them all off. Bang, bang, bang. Then we've got to privatize Amtrak and the Postal Service. Now, we are told that the Postal Service operates because they sell stamps and some packaging and those kinds of things, but they still record a loss of billions of dollars every year. I think there is private industry out there that would run it much better, much more efficiently. The same with Amtrak. There are private companies out there that will run Amtrak much better, and we won't be losing money. There's several things, several departments. Right now we have, and I believe it's in the Department of Commerce, and I apologize, I don't remember exactly which federal department it's in, but we have an economic development program that is being shut down right now. And as I was reading about it, one of the articles said that it was being shut down because there are 62 other programs that do the same thing that it does. Now, I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, okay, so we have 63 total programs that are all doing the same thing. Why aren't we shutting down 62 of them and just keep one? That makes no sense to me. It's backwards to shut down one and leave the others. No, that's wrong. Again, billions of dollars will be saved. That's why I want to go to Washington. And, you know, we had the tax cuts a few years ago, and they were great. And I know we felt the effect. It wasn't huge, but we could see a difference in our taxes. But what we need to do to really get the full effect that we can get from lower taxes is we have to cut federal spending.
That's well said. What is your position right now as it relates to Donald Trump's foreign policy? What do you think about what he's doing in general?
Mm-hmm.
And you can unpackage this however you like. What do you think about
sure.
his foreign policy? And if you agree, that's fine. If you disagree, then share us your thoughts on what
sure.
the president is doing right now with his national security.
Yep. I think we are seeing the evolution of the Trump doctrine. I think that he's going in. I think the number one principle that he lives by is America first, which makes perfect sense. After 8 years of someone who saw America as last, it's refreshing. But yeah, he's very that's a principle for him. America first. He's going in and saying we're going to do what's right for us first. So he sits down with China. He sits down, gets rid of NAFTA. However, I don't like the new treaty any more than I like NAFTA. And we can talk about that in a minute. He's got the Chinese. He got them to the table. The EU, he's doing a lot of good stuff out there. That's part of his foreign policy, all of these trade agreements. They have less to do with economics than they do with what I call the Trump doctrine of putting America first. He sees it as, you know, it's trade, it's commerce, as well as military. how he handled the Iran situation was freaking genius in my mind. And I have often, over the last 10 years, thought, we've got Navy SEALs, we've got Army Rangers, we've got all of these very specialized groups. When someone messes with us, let's just send in a specialized group. The country that's messing with us pays a price, and we come home. No long-term, we know nation-building doesn't work. We know deposing dictators doesn't work long-term. None of these things that we've tried have worked long-term. So I like this idea. You go in, you use your drones, you use whatever you've got, so that the person messing with us understands you will pay a price, and you're not going to like it. I like that attitude. I think that's how it should be. I also believe in economic sanctions. I think it's economic sanctions that causes people to raise up and get rid of their own government. We know, and this is something the mainstream media doesn't report very often, that in Iran, for the last couple of years, they've had massive strikes and massive demonstrations, frequently led by the women who run the main bazaar in Tehran, because they're oppressed and they're running their business because their husbands won't help them. I mean, it's just, it's wonderful to see. What's been going on in Hong Kong is wonderful to see, because those are two situations where we can't just go in and, you know, save everybody. We know that doesn't work long term. So we have to be patient. We have to be careful. But, you know, getting rid of a despicable human being who meant us harm, I'm okay with that.
Well said. Bringing it about back to America, what do you think about the current impeachment trial that is going on in the Senate right now?
Well, there are a few Democrats who I think need a good therapist, because they're obsessed. They're eating, sleeping, drinking this, and it's not real. They've created an illusion for themselves, and they're so adamant. It's out of proportion. Their tenacity and it's ugly now. It's just ugly, and I can't help but feel sorry for some of these people, because they can't see the forest for the trees. They can't see what they're doing. They can't see that they are just obsessed and not doing anybody any good. I'm embarrassed for them. But I think it not that it's a sickness. I know there are some people, you know, Trump derangement syndrome. Some of these people may have that. I don't know. But I think this display of an obsession is disconcerting and sad. And when this all started, I went back and I was reading up on Peter Rodino. That man was an absolute hero. He was the Democrat who led the Judicial Committee during Watergate. And this is a guy who was appointed that position to handle the Watergate investigation in the House, because he was known to be fair-minded. He would be accurate. He would be careful, take good notes, use good people, follow the advice of other lawyers. And he was a lawyer. And when he first was asked to do this, he said, yeah, I'm a lawyer, but I haven't been in a courtroom for 30 years. Why would you want me? At one point, he ended up in the hospital from exhaustion. This guy, and I wish in his lifetime we had done a better job of honoring him. And I think he's probably rolling in his grave at what the Democrats are doing right now, because it is so shameful and so 180 degrees different from what he did. And that's the model they should have followed. But they're selfish and self-centered. Peter Rodino was not selfish and self-centered. We now have a crop of members of Congress who care more about themselves than they do about principle or about their constituents.
I could not agree with you more. We are living in very trying times. And the election of Donald Trump has reared, I call, the ugly head of the left of the Democratic Party, Democratic Socialists. I mean, his presidency has clearly defined who's who in politics today. For that, I'm very thankful.
Yep.
Because people are able to see really the reality of what our legislators in Congress are not doing. And
mm-hmm.
it's a shame.
I agree.
It's a shame
yep.
that not only what's transpiring in Congress, but it's a shame when you have the fake news media that participates in this sham investigation. So that's why we're
right.
here, U.S. national elections, to cut through the red tape where we are not beholden to anyone but the American people. And I'm your host, Chauncey Brown, and we thank congressional candidate Mary Burke, as well as the other candidates that we have on our show, that wants to serve the public good, wants to be a public servant, and wants to bring America together and protect our Constitution. We're very thankful for people like yourself that want to step up.
Thank you.
And serve the public in these very, very
thank
trying
you.
Times. And I also want to say thank you for standing up without having any political motives. That's very important that we say that to the American people. The American people are waking up. They are, and I've seen this through everyone that I have interviewed across the country, that there's a new wave in this 2020 election, that there are people like yourself that are already doing the job as if they were in Congress or Senate. They're on the ground already working to help and save American people. And that's why
yeah.
I think that this 2020 election cycle is going to be a huge red wave, and I believe it's going to be a huge turn of events for our country. For the good. Education.
And I think there are some, yeah, there are some Republican incumbents like the one that I'm running against who will be very surprised at how things go. And, you know, win or lose, I'm doing this for your grandchildren and my grandchildren. Chauncey, do you remember when you grew up, and I bet you heard this as many times as I did, you know, my parents would say, we got the world in a certain condition. And we've made it better
mm-hmm.
as best we could. Now we're handing it off to you, and we want you
amen.
To make it even better. Yeah.
Amen.
I grew up with that.
Amen.
And it dawned
and you know
on me a couple of weeks ago, we don't do that anymore. We don't tell our kids, you're responsible. You need to make it better. And we don't make decisions based on the future. We make decisions based on what we see right in front of us. That's wrong. We've got to change the tide. We've got to elect more people like me who are going to always be making my decisions based on principle and on the future.
I could not agree more. And that leads me into the question I was going to ask you about education. When I went
mm-hmm.
to school as well as you, civic responsibility, public service was an honor to serve
yep.
your public. They don't teach civics. They don't teach American history anymore. They don't teach what statesmanship is like. They don't teach what your responsibility is as a community person, how you should give back to your communities. The
right.
educational system right now, the federal education system, is larger than the military budget. And that's sad
yep.
because our children are not being able to compete globally in our society with the left pushing this narrative that it's important for our children to learn about people's sexual orientations and different sexual
mm-hmm.
roles people should play while they're engaging in sex. I find that monstrously immoral and sickening that
yeah,
they
want
to impose their will upon our children, where our children, the parents, should be responsible for educating our children about sex education and not the public school system. I mean, I supported the realm of if they wanted to talk about how to take care of your child, if you have a early pregnancy, I support things of that nature to help young people who are having children be able to adapt with their new situation and transition in society. But when you are, you know, it undermines on the heels of Martin Luther King's birthday. He said, I hope that our children are judged by our content and character of our
right.
being. Not by our
right.
skin color, sexual orientation, religion in the democratic party
gender.
And left gender.
Yes.
Yeah, they have eroded the moral fiber of this country. And yes, we do need more people like yourself to stand up and fight, I call, against the devil that is ruling its ugly head. And I thank God also for President Trump, I believe, re-signing recently the Religious Freedom Act, allowing us to practice our religious freedoms as we see fit.
Yep.
And it's very,
and how sad,
very, very important.
Since that's already spelled out in our Constitution, how sad it is that we have to have another act to stand up for those things, that it's already in the Constitution. We have freedom of religion. And it's like, why do we have to reiterate these things? It's because we're not doing a good job of holding them, standing up for them. I don't know. But it's sad that the president has to go that far to remind us all. It's in our Constitution anyway. And I was going to make a note, in our Utah Constitution, when it comes to education, it says very clearly that parents are the number one providers of education to their kids.
Exactly. You know, I believe that it's the parents' responsibility to educate children, and it's the responsibility of teachers to teach children how to comprehend and learn.
Right.
And, you know, I happen to serve as two terms as Commissioner of Education in New Jersey, and I identified that in order for us to save our children, especially in challenging urban areas, okay, where you have language barrier problems or illiteracy problems, or you have parents that work a couple of jobs, if you do not tie in the parents to their educational system, and I mean we have to offer programs that if parents have a language barrier or are not able to read and write, how can the children go home and the parents reinforce what they've learned if they don't have the ability to be able to assist them? So that's another dynamic that we really need. You know, we always talk about parent involvement. And I'm not just talking about, like I said, parent involvement as it relates to participating in the PTA. We need parent involvement on the educational level of learning with their children so they can reinforce it when they get home. And I know that's very, very challenging, but I hope that we could move to some type of middle ground in order to do that, as well as civics, statesmanship, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. We don't learn these things in school anymore. So
yeah,
our
not the way
are,
you and I learned it. Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, we have pride. I have pride in America. I'm proud to be in America, an American, as my father was a Navy veteran, an American patriot. And I'm glad that he taught me those values, as I teach my kid those values. But like I mentioned, you know, when you get in Congress, please revisit the educational piece to give our children a better opportunity to compete globally.
I
go ahead,
want
Mary.
To shut down the federal I want to shut down the Federal Department of Education because it does nothing but interfere. I believe that the people of Maryland know best how to educate their children. Here in Utah, we know best how to educate our children. And it really bothers me when I hear people say, well, we're educating them for this global market they're going to participate in. Well, okay, that's a piece of it. But what 7-year-old knows what their profession is going to be by the time they get there? And we live in a culture – I mean, I've had like 3 different careers. That's what happens, you know? And I think – I listen to people who work in education, and it's like they want us to create little robots out of our children. It's like, no. What makes us great, we Americans, is that we're the innovators, we're the thinkers, we're the doers, we're the problem solvers. And we do that by way of letting people go, get out of the structure and go do those things that you're dreaming of. And my husband and I were just talking about this a couple of days ago. I hung out in high school with a group of people who were of my faith, and there were probably 12 of us total in our high school of about 2,000 students, and we just hung out together. And we would talk about, what do you want to do when you grow up? What are you, you know, And one of those 12 people ended up being what they said they wanted to be in high school. Everybody else pursued different paths. And it bothers me and concerns me when we talk about, you know, your child goes to kindergarten where we're going to start testing them to get their aptitude, and we're going to help them with their aptitude. It's like their aptitude at 5 is going to be different from their aptitude at 15. So let these kids go. That's who we are as people. We're the innovators of the world. We're the inventors of the world. We're the problem solvers of the world. Let's not take that away from our grandchildren and our children. Let's make sure they still have it, because that's what's going to make them the movers and shakers in their world. I think the Federal Department of Education is all about cookie cutter, what I call cookie cutter recipe education. It bothers me.
I want to take it one step further, and I believe that the federal education system has become a political point for corruption, contracts,
mm-hmm.
political patronage jobs. That is where
yep.
our educational system has gone to. I just want to just dovetail, because we're at a close. I just want to make one more point before
sure.
you share with the American people how they can volunteer in contact with you. One of the
sure.
things,
sure.
when you talked about testing does nothing to elevate the level of consciousness of our children. We need to engage our children in critical thinking skills, okay, to allow them
yep.
to express and think for themselves. We need to open that up. We are stymieing our children and our educational system and our teachers by teachers now are forced to being teaching to a test versus teaching
right.
to be able to be good stewards in society, civic responsibilities, and things of that nature. We're at a close. We're going to have you on again. We're always thankful for your insight and your desire to serve and help the public good. Please let America know if they want to contact you, donate to your campaign, or volunteer, how they can do that, Mary.
Thank you so much for letting me do this. I need money. I'm at a real crucial point in this campaign, and I need money. You can donate very easily at Burkett, Burkett, the number 4, Utah, UTAH.com. That's Burkett, Burkett, the number 4, Utah.com. And my phone number is there. So if you have an idea, a thought, call me. And, you know, I've got some people, I've got volunteers that have said, well, Mary, why don't we take your phone and we'll, no. I answer the phone. Don't worry about it. Because I want people to know that they can reach me and talk to me, and I will listen.
Mary, thank you so much for your time to
thank
serve
you.
And step up for the public good, for America. We look forward to having you back on the show, and thank you once again.
Thank you. Take care. Have a great day.
You too. For those that are tuning in, this is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We had the honor and pleasure of having Utah 2020 congressional candidate with us that wants to represent the 2nd District, Mary Burkett, today, talking about Utah and her plans for America. You can follow us on Facebook at U.S. National Elections. You can also follow us at U.S. National Elections on Twitter. You can follow me at Right Talk Host on Facebook and Right Talk Host on Twitter. Please join us for our next guest that will be on next week on the 29th at 5 o'clock, Tim Fazenbaker, 2020 candidate for U.S. Congress out of Maryland. He is a dynamic person that comes from the healthcare, mental health industry. Please tune in on the 29th at 5 o'clock. That's next Wednesday for Tim Fazenbaker. We thank you all for listening to our show today. God bless America, God bless our president, and God bless you all.